It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. First today, we follow up on a conversation you may remember, one we had back in April of this year with brother and sister, Zach and Zebby Walls of Iowa City. If you remember this conversation, they had just launched a Kickstarter campaign to raise money to create a special deck of playing cards called the Woman Cards. This is to celebrate significant American women in history. Their goal was to raise, initial goal was to raise $5,000. Okay, $5,000 is what they wanted. They ended up raising more than $150,000 from something like 5,000 backers. Well, the cards with Zebby's individual artwork of the women are finished. They are in the hands of thousands of backers. I have a deck of the Woman Cards in my hand, and the co-creators of the Woman Cards, Zebby and Zach Walls, are sitting across the table from me in our Iowa City studio. Zach and Zebby, welcome back to the program.
Good to be back.
Thank you so much for having us.
I've been following this in the press. You've received tremendous press, not just in Iowa, but across the country, perhaps worldwide. I'm not sure.
So they wound up being covered in Australia. In the Sydney Morning Herald, it was in the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, their ABC. It was kind of crazy.
Amazing. Take us back. Remind us, what was the genesis of this project?
Well, back in April, Donald Trump accused Hillary Clinton of playing the woman card, said that if she wasn't a woman, she wouldn't be getting 5% of the vote. And the Clinton campaign responded that if fighting for women's access to health care and equal pay for equal work and paid family leave is playing the woman card, then deal me in. Mm-hmm. And that's actually become a common line that Clinton now uses on the stump. She used it in her acceptance speech at the DNC. And we wanted to take that really negative comment from Mr. Trump and transform it into something positive, something inspirational, something educational. And that became the woman cards.
Okay. And so this is a quality deck of cards. They are all sold out now.
Correct. So we put quality first. That was a big priority for us. We wanted this to be something that you could feel proud of owning, proud of supporting. We wanted them to be made in America. They were obviously drawn here in Iowa. As of Tuesday afternoon, our entire inventory of 12,500 decks is
12,500 decks.
That's
all
right.
Gone.
Yeah. They're all accounted for. We had about 8,000 that were originally ordered by our Kickstarter backers, and then we had an additional 4,500 that we ordered, thinking that we could, between selling at the DNC and other online pre-orders, and as of Tuesday afternoon, they're all accounted for. They are still available for purchase at a few select retailers here in the Iowa City area, Prairie Lights Bookstore, Textiles, Revival, and Ray Gun, all in the downtown Iowa City area have them, but they are going very fast. I know that Prairie Lights and Textiles both doubled their orders after just 24 hours of having the cards in the stock. So they're flying off the shelves.
These are marvelous, marvelous pictures here, illustrations that you made of these people.
Thank you so much.
Zebby, let's just list off who is in here. Hillary Clinton, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Beyonce, Harriet Tubman, Mary Cassatt, Amelia Earhart, Ida B. Wells, a few names I don't know. Rosa Parks, Wilma Rudolph, the Jokers, suitably so, Betty White and Ellen DeGeneres, Dr. Sally Ride, an astronaut there, Susan B. Anthony, Clara Barton. I don't know if I got them all here. Talk about the selection of, you were limited to 15. You're making a deck of cards, right? So what was that conversation like? Because I know when you left the studio last time in April, it was like, oh, we've got to really start thinking about who's going to be
on
these cards.
Yeah. Well, we were still finalizing the lineup, I think, or maybe we had...
We decided on the 13 women, but we hadn't quite decided on the Jokers yet. The Jokers came
a little bit later.
Yeah.
Well, the initial selection process, so we have this idea. We're talking with some friends on social media. This is something, an idea we're kicking around. What do you think? And then we're down in my bedroom, and Zebby and I are literally just like throwing out names.
Yeah, just spitballing names.
And Zebby had the original insight that we should go
just
with
do American women, because if we have like the entire history of women in the entire world to pick from, we're never going to be able to narrow it down to just 13 and then 15.
So it was obviously also, they don't have to be dead. Beyonce's still around,
right,
of course.
Yeah.
Hillary Clinton's still around. So this can be any time period, just women who are important to American history.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, we wanted a few people who are big deals in the here and now, people like Beyonce, people like Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Hillary Clinton, obviously, the definition of topical, I think, at the moment. But we also wanted to pay tribute to American women who had changed the world, including some people who might not be as well known, but who made very important contributions anyway.
Yeah. And those women who like paved the way for the success in a lot of ways for the women today, like Susan B. Anthony, you know, in a lot of ways paving the way for Hillary Clinton to then become, you know.
Enlighten me on a couple here that I don't know. Wilma Rudolph. Who's Wilma Rudolph?
So she was this woman who had polio. And we, Zach and I, grew up reading this book, Wilma Unlimited, which was this children's story about her and her life. And she went on to go win 3 Olympic gold medals in track and field, which is just this absolutely incredible story.
Despite spending 5 years in a leg brace from the polio. And that 5 years she spent in the leg brace is why she is the number 5 in our deck. Each woman's number corresponds to a fact from her biography or something that she did.
Claire. Mm-hmm. Okay. What about Ida B. Wells?
Ida B. Wells was an American journalist in the late 1800s, and she's the number 3 in our deck because her long campaign against lynching was started when she lost 3 close friends of hers to lynching in the South, and that inspired her to go around the entire Deep South, traveling from city to city, gathering stories of people who had been lynched, and she provided a lot of the information that we now really rely on to try and understand and contextualize the lynching, the terror that black Americans experienced during that time. She then went on to become a founding member of the NAACP. She is remembered today as one of America's pioneering black women journalists. And we were very, very proud to have her in the deck.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, when I don't even have to ask the question, you paid attention to diversity here in this deck. You wanted, with Wilma Rudolph, Ida B. Wells, you wanted diversity represented here.
Yeah, of course. You know, diversity in race, diversity in religion, diversity in sexual orientation and gender identity. We wanted a deck of women who would reflect America, and we weren't perfect. We didn't include any Native American or Asian American Pacific Islander women. That's something that if we wind up doing a second edition deck, we'll be paying close attention to. We've gotten lots of really great feedback. We've got hundreds of suggestions.
Over 200 suggestions.
Yeah, of people.
Over 200 suggestions. You could have multiple. We could. If you just join us, I'm talking with Zebby and Zach Walls, co-creators of the Woman Cards. This was a Kickstarter campaign started back in April. Went crazy. They originally wanted just $5,000 to kickstart this campaign. It turned out within a few weeks, $150,000 from something like 5,000 backers, and the cards are now out. I'm holding a deck of them in my hands right at the moment. Zebby, talk a little bit about the amazing likenesses that you captured in your portraits of these American women. What was your approach?
So really the key in capturing a likeness of anybody is just to have a lot of different images of the person who you're trying to draw, a lot of different angles, just so you can get a feel for the shape of their face and their features and what features are the most important in generating their likeness. And for some of the women, this was much harder to find than others, like for people who are still alive today, like Hillary Clinton, Beyonce. There's a lot of pictures of their faces online with all these different angles, but for some of them, like Harriet Tubman or Ida B. Wells, who lived much, much longer ago, it's much harder to find good reference photos of them. And so, you know, that was necessarily slightly more challenging to capture their likeness, but, you know, that was really important to me that I did, and, you know...
Mm-hmm. How long did it take you to create one of these portraits here? How many hours would you say went into the average one?
Into the average one, probably about 11 hours. I mean, I was up dawn to dusk every day doing these
And you had to start so when we were back here in April, Zebby was just about to start her finals at the University of Iowa.
I remember.
And so it was we was running the Kickstarter, sprint into finals. You took 1 day off? Just kind of vegged a little bit, and then
No, it went off. It went straight from finals, straight to the cards.
And then Zach was sliding pizzas under your door while you were trying to get those.
No, our mother's Dr. Terry Walls. That's
pizza
not
doesn't fly
well,
in this household.
A certain type of very healthy.
That's right.
Pizza.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Lots of kale in the pizza.
Oh yeah.
So what were the biggest challenges as an illustrator here for you? What did perhaps some unexpected roadblocks here, or things that were any of these women especially frustrating to draw, or just hard to kind of crack the likeness so that it just said, ah, yes, that's her?
Yeah, so honestly, I think Amelia Earhart ended up being the most difficult woman to draw.
Really?
And I think that largely it was because I was trying to capture a way to reflect her accomplishments and her personality in a way that didn't have a giant flying airplane, because I wanted to have, you know, a portrait of her rather than, you know, merely just the vehicle that she drew. And one of the most challenging parts of it was I wanted to capture this moment of her taking off her flight goggles.
I see that. I'm looking at the card right now. She's got her a scarf trailing off behind her and the goggles coming up here.
It's one of my favorite images, actually.
Yeah, and I think it ended up being my favorite as well.
Yeah. And it's kind of, you know, Amelia Earhart is connected with the gear, the flight gear. That she's with this kind of Amelia Earhart fashion here.
Mm-hmm. And she had her own fashion line, actually.
Really?
Aviator-inspired fashion line. She, you know.
Did she play any creative role in that, or was it just like her?
I'm not 100% sure, actually. I mean, I would assume that she played a fairly creative role, but I'm not 100% sure. So can't comment.
She's the number nine, by the way, just very quickly.
Yeah.
Because
okay,
she broke
number nine, the significance of
she,
nine?
She broke nine aviation records during her career as a pilot worldwide.
Okay, so there's things hidden in the stack that you have to kind of discover. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, king?
So she's the king because over the last 2 years, she's been often depicted as the notorious RBG, which is a callback to the New York-based rapper, the notorious B.I.G., and he was depicted on a Rolling Stone cover wearing the king's crown, and it became a really iconic photograph of him, and she's often depicted wearing it, too, so we thought it was appropriate for the deck.
What's the secret behind Clara Barton being the Jack?
So this is the one that's actually just a little tough because she did so much. She did a lot of work on women's suffrage. She did a lot of work. She started the American Red Cross. She spoke all over the country. So she really is kind of a jack of all trades. Of all of the ranks and signifiers, that one's probably the weakest. But she had just such an accomplished, multifaceted career, it seemed appropriate.
Okay. I wonder, is there any legal hurdles you had to overcome here in making these likenesses? Could I go out and create a deck of cards and whomever I like just put on there and have a fabulous illustrator like you, Zebby, pick them and I would have no legal problems? Do you have to pay anything to these people?
Yeah, so we did our due diligence. We worked with an intellectual property lawyer from the get-go, and because of the laws in Iowa, we're on pretty solid ground. If you were in a different state, you might have to jump through some different hurdles, but we're pretty good here.
So the laws say what? You can do what you like?
Well, this started as, in our project, really strong freedom of protection, and I believe in some states like California, there are certain right of publicity laws that govern the way that various images or likenesses are used, but we don't have one of those laws in the state.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, we did, of course, reach out to the Clinton campaign. We didn't want to. So, in fact, if you go back to
Clinton, let's see, she's the ace.
Yeah. And actually, she's the ace because, so you might have noticed playing cards, there's only one spot on the ace, and that is because the term ace is means essentially single or one. And when we originally created the deck, she was the only woman presumptive to be, you know, the nominee of a major party for president of the United States. Now, of course, today the deck is done.
Yeah.
She
actually
is the only woman who's ever been nominated for president of the United States. But back when we had this idea in April, before we even started the Kickstarter, we reached out to the Clinton campaign. And it turned out that they were working on a similar project. If you go to HillaryClinton.com, you can find in their store a deck of similar playing cards. I don't know if they're actually formally called the woman cards. I presume so.
I think so.
So they have a competing deck of cards.
Yeah, well, but I wouldn't say that these are competing. I'd say you can buy both.
They're very different.
For sure.
They're very different tones. One's more like facts, education-based, and ours more of a celebration of American history.
Hillary Clinton and Zevi, you illustrated her holding a card. Why is she holding a card? She's, the only one holding a card.
Because the genesis of the entire project came down to that immortal line of, well, if this is playing the woman card, then deal me in. And I wanted to pay homage to that.
Reaction from the Clinton campaign?
They liked it. They liked the project. They gave us a thumbs up. And that, for us, was the most important thing. We didn't want to undermine what they were doing, undermine anything that they had in the works. So actually, we weren't the only people to think of this. NARAL, the reproductive rights advocacy organization, also had a similar deck of cards called the gender cards. So there were a couple of people who had the idea at the same time. You know, we really want to celebrate all of them. Because they're all a great repudiation of Mr. Trump's really abhorrent comment.
Mm-hmm. We want to make it clear to our listeners, you are a delegate.
Correct. I was a delegate at the Democratic National Convention for Hillary Clinton.
And also to back up even a little bit further than that, for those listeners who don't know, you've been in the limelight quite a while since 2009?
2011.
2011. Yeah. We went back too far. You gave a short address before the Iowa legislature against an amendment to ban same-sex marriage. Mm-hmm. That was a video that went viral around the country, around the world. You're author of a best-selling book, mm-hmm. My Two Moms, which tells about your upbringing in Iowa City.
Our two moms, I guess.
Yeah, yours.
Well, my sister's in the studio.
Book is called My Two Moms. But anyway, son and daughter of two lesbians, and now you're an activist on behalf of LGBT equality. Just to catch everybody up on where you're coming from. You were at the DNC in 2012. You gave a speech at the Democratic National Convention in 2012. This year you were there. I want to ask, of course, the big story out of the Democratic National Convention this year, the Bernie Sanders delegates. What was it like there? Very unhappy delegates, a couple hundred of them from the Bernie Sanders camp. Mm-hmm. How did you experience that?
Well, so in the Iowa delegation, I thought people were generally quite supportive. There were a select number, a handful of I think, Bernie or bust folks, but the majority of the Iowa delegation, very respectful. Senator Sanders actually came and spoke to our delegation at one of our state breakfasts.
No kidding.
I believe it was on Tuesday morning, the day after he'd given his big speech calling for unity on Monday night. And he was obviously very well received. People really liked his message. Frankly, I think the bigger story coming out of the convention, the unity was absolutely the focus of day one and continued to be a part of the convention. But I thought the biggest story coming out of the DNC was just how dramatically different the visions of the Democratic Party and the Republican Party are after the two conventions had gone forward. You'd heard from Donald Trump, a billionaire who spent his entire convention and his entire speech talking to us about how terrible America is. And at the Democratic convention, we heard not just from Secretary Clinton, but from people of all walks of life, including mothers who had lost their children to police violence, stand up and say to America that there is nothing wrong with America that can't be fixed by what is right with America. And the contrast between mothers who have endured the worst possible human experience imaginable, testifying to the strength of the American dream, contrasted with a billionaire standing up and telling all of America how awful our country is, I think that contrast just encapsulates the entire difference of the campaign.
Mm-hmm. You also had this deck of cards at the Democratic convention, a few hundred of them.
We ended up selling about 500 decks at the DNC. They were a big hit. Even Senator Tom Harkin bought a deck and told us that it was one heck of a deck.
From
Senator Tom Harkin.
Okay, well, there you go. That's your review for Amazon.
Yeah. we're both big fans of Senator Harkin and his work with the Americans with Disabilities Act, both of us having a mom who spent several years in a wheelchair. Yeah. He's an important person to us.
Mm-hmm. Now, tell us a little bit about the revenue, far in excess of what you needed to kickstart this campaign, with over mm-hmm. $150,000 from the backers. That's also not counting the revenue that's coming in from people just purchasing the deck, I guess, there. So where does all this profit go, if I may ask?
Well, a large chunk of it went right back into the deck. We wanted to use the highest quality card material and, you know, making the talk box just as good as we possibly could.
So once you got this huge outpouring of investors here, so to speak, you mm-hmm. said, we want to go top notch with the quality of the deck.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, we solicited multiple bids from possible printers. We got bids, for as low as like $1.50 a deck to as high as $3.30 a deck, which was what we finally wound up going with, and that was going to be the very highest quality with the box, with the foil, the embossing.
Where were they
manufactured?
So they're manufactured down in Texas.
Okay.
Liberty playing cards.
Made in
America.
Was that important to you too?
That was extremely important to us. Yeah.
If it's a deck of women celebrating, a deck of cards celebrating American women, we thought it should be made in America.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. So people can find out more by going to thewomancards.com. You can see all the cards there. What's yet to come? I mean, you have two very busy lives. We talked a little bit about before the microphones went on. You've got both plans. Debbie, what are your plans in the coming year?
So August 31st, I'll be heading off to Italy to go study arts. And after that, I'm going to start looking at grad school.
Where are you studying arts in Italy?
Oh, in Florence at this American-run school called Saatchi.
Mm-hmm. Studying art in Florence.
Yeah,
not a bad choice.
Not a bad place to do it.
I have to ask you, after all of the media attention given to this, have people been lining up to commission pieces from you?
I have actually gotten a few commissions to come out of it, but mostly I'm just focused on finishing up the commission for the cards and just trying to wrap up everything here before I head off to Italy. And it's very exciting.
Okay. And you can see more of Zebby's art at zebwalls.com.
Indeed.
Yep. Zebwahls.com.
And Zach Walls, your future, you're heading out east.
That's right. So I'll be starting at the Woodrow Wilson School of International and Public Affairs at Princeton University on Monday, August 22nd. I leave in a week, which is a little mind-boggling. We're still kind of running around trying to to wind down the woman cards, and now I'm packing for graduate school. It's a two-year degree for a Master's of Public Affairs, studying public policy. And it's a real privilege to be a part of, a really incredible class of people.
Uh-huh. Zebby, I have to ask you, because I think you were doubtful in April when this idea was first launched. What if you had known all that this entailed back then? Would you have said, okay, let's go for it? Were you doubtful at any time what your big brother was telling you here? Let's go for it.
Maybe just the timeline that he set out. That was a little tough to make, but I'm so glad we were able to get it done. And
The vast majority of Kickstarter projects do not ship on time, and ours was just about 2 weeks outside of the initial window that we'd set. So we actually feel really good about how it was an aggressive timeline, and my sister did a heck of a job. But it was an aggressive timeline. We met it. And if you've ordered your cards online and you haven't received them yet, our final batch of shipments is going to start going out next Monday. And hopefully you'll have them certainly no later than the end of the month.
Okay. Zach and Zebby Walls of Iowa City, co-creators of the Woman Cards. You really have to take a look at these, at least online. We'll put a post at iowapublicradio.org. Also, thewomancards.com is where you can find out more about Zach and Zebby and this project. And I want to thank you both for coming in, and good luck in Italy.
Thank you. Good luck in New Jersey.
Appreciate it.
Okay. When we come back, we'll follow up with some Republican caucus goers here in Iowa who didn't support Donald Trump. The last time we spoke with them was back in January, just before the caucuses. We'll get analysis also from Donna Hoffman when we return. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. And we're back midstream in this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. If you remember back in January, just before the Iowa caucuses, it seems like years ago, actually just over a half year ago, when the Iowa caucuses took place. We spoke with two Republican caucus goers then on the eve of our state's caucuses. And now with the conventions behind us, the party's nominees for president chosen, and just 88 days until the election, we want to check back with a couple of those caucus goers to find out where their thinking is now. Dan Durant is with us. He caucused for John Kasich. He joins us again by phone. Dan, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Ben. Glad to be here.
Margaret Guth is with us as well. She caucused for Ted Cruz at the beginning of the year. Margaret, welcome to you.
Thank you very much.
Donna Hoffman is with us, one of our regular political experts, associate professor of political science at the University of Northern Iowa, joining us as well to give us a bit of analysis about the state of the GOP. Donna, welcome to you. I think Donna's going to be connected with us in just a moment, but let's start out with the two of you. Margaret, you caucused for Ted Cruz. Remind us, what was his appeal to you?
His appeal to me is that he has very similar value systems as I do, and the first is that he really respects life from beginning to end. And when somebody has your back like that, then there's a lot of other things you can trust him with.
Mm-hmm. And so, in fact, he turned out edging out Donald Trump in Iowa in the Iowa caucuses. So, actually, it looked bright for your candidate right after the Iowa caucuses, didn't it?
Right.
Mm-hmm. What is your reaction to Donald Trump being nominated?
Well, it was getting to be pretty obvious that was going to happen, and I really was probably put off by him. And once I began to see his worldview, just the way he thinks and acts, you know, then I'm not so surprised about some of the things that happen now. So I'm kind of more, well, okay, we can have what we have in front of us. People pretty much have decided. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of right there.
Okay, so kind of right there means you are now supporting Donald Trump as the nominee.
I am, because I do not want Hillary Clinton. So I'm voting against her by voting for him.
Mm-hmm. You think Donald Trump is the better choice there. Dan Durant, you caucused for John Kasich. Remind us of why he appealed to you.
Well, Ben, I looked at his resume, and he had the strongest resume of any of the candidates, and he actually acted like an adult, which was very refreshing. And those two factors combined to lead me to believe that he was the best qualified candidate. He had the broadest and deepest resume, and he actually behaved like a normal human being.
Mm. How do you feel now that Trump is the nominee?
Wow. Who'd have thunk, right? I honestly still am not decided. I haven't decided that I'm going to support Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you that I won't support Hillary Clinton.
Right.
But I think it was Mark Twain who said, you don't vote for somebody, you vote against somebody. And I'm not sure how I feel right now.
What are the main reasons, the sticking points you have with Donald Trump, being a backer of Donald Trump?
Why am I not on board?
It sounds like you're straddling a fence there. Yeah, why are you not on board?
It's the outrageous statement of the week.
Right.
The constant, nonstop controversy over things that he says. And I've seen his acceptance speech at the Democratic or at the Republican nomination, and when he sticks to his talking points, he makes a lot of sense. He says all of the right things, but when he's speaking off the cuff, extemporaneously, he's a nightmare, and I don't know what I'm going to do at this point. Gary Johnson is actually looking a candidate that could be supported.
The Libertarian nominee for president. If you just joined us, Dan Durant is with us, a Republican caucus goer from West Des Moines. Also Margaret Guth there. We're checking back with a couple of caucus goers who did not support Donald Trump to see where the thinking is now. And also we have with us Donna Hoffman, I believe, has joined us now by phone. And Donna, are you there?
I am here, Ben.
Thank you. I think you've been listening for a few minutes. We had a few problems getting connected there at the beginning. Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Northern Iowa, and, of course, one of our regular political experts here on Iowa Public Radio. Donna Hoffman, I don't know how much you heard of Margaret there. And Dan, Margaret now originally caucusing for Ted Cruz. Of course, he won the Iowa caucuses. Now she's backing Trump more as an anti-Hillary type of support. Dan Durant, undecided there, but sounds like he could be convinced to support Donald Trump. Donna Hoffman, do these represent Republican voters at the moment, a good chunk of them?
I do think so, but you also have a lot of Republican voters who are very clearly behind Trump, too, so that's maybe left out of the two callers that you have as well. But certainly there's a whole range of degree of support for the current nominee. And one of the things that Dan said I wanted to emphasize, so in American elections, you have a ballot. That's how we register the voice of the people, right? The problem with that is you can't tell what the voice of the people is saying. And what that refers to is whether you're voting affirmatively for someone or whether you're voting against someone else. And so when politicians or anybody else looks at election returns, they can see who won, but they can't tell why people voted for them or if they voted against the other person. And that then presents problems sometimes in terms of governing. But that's very much the kind of situation that we're in this particular election, because both of these people who didn't support Trump in the caucuses are trying to come around to that. They're struggling with it, maybe more some more than others. But there's this notion of I don't want to support Hillary Clinton, and that may be the thing that unites, I should say, the people who are still looking at the election and not exactly sure if they're going to vote for Donald Trump or not. But it seems pretty clear that there's a good section of Republican voters that certainly are not going to vote for Hillary Clinton.
Mm-hmm. Has there been any recent elections in modern U.S. history where we have such a situation where either one party or the other really struggles to unify behind the nominee as they are doing so with Trump?
Yeah, we have nothing parallels this particular election in so many ways. But you do have instances within a party where they've had trouble unifying. We could look at the 1980 election where Teddy Kennedy challenges Carter for the nomination. And so the Democrats were kind of lukewarm, or at least some Democrats were rather lukewarm in that sense about uniting, getting behind a particular candidate, their particular nominee, Jimmy Carter in that instance, who would then go on to lose to Ronald Reagan. And then 4 years before, you had Reagan challenging the sitting President Ford in the Republican convention as well. And so those are maybe hints in terms of which the parties have had trouble coming together, but I think not to the extent recently that we've seen with Donald Trump, because the field on the Republican side was so large. You know, Trump can say that more primary voters voted for him than any other Republican nominee in history, and that is true, but he still only won a plurality of the people who voted in the primaries and caucuses. And so that means that a majority of the people who chose to participate in those events didn't vote for him. And so he's got to make inroads to get those people on board. And as Dan was mentioning, he says provocative things. And so the headlines from day to day to day tend to be about Donald Trump saying something and then his clarification of what he said, and then maybe even repeating that. And so what might have been a one-day story in a traditional campaign becomes a five-day story as he continues to talk about it. And many of the people in the establishment Republican Party want to move on to other things, want to keep the focus on Hillary Clinton, but the focus continues to come back to Donald Trump. And the Clinton campaign really does want to make this an election that's a referendum on Trump.
Right, and issues are put by the side almost. Donald Trump giving a economic policy speech on Monday, but then since Monday he's had at least two, if not more, major sort of remarks. The one about Second Amendment people. If Hillary Clinton picks judges for the Supreme Court, also just yesterday calling President Obama the founder of ISIS and Hillary Clinton the co-founder of ISIS. So this really takes the focus off the issues. Have I got that right, Donna?
Yeah, it certainly does. And it makes it about the daily dynamics of the campaign. And so there's very little discussion of policy issues. I mean, you know, we did get that speech, as you mentioned, that economic speech from Trump in which he was talking about policy. But then we veer off into talking about sideshow kinds of things based on something that Trump has said that then takes the focus away from serious policy discussions. Now, having said that, we should note that many presidential elections aren't primarily fought around policy issues, but certainly the candidates do try to talk about those to some degree, and voters to varying degrees want to hear that, but that doesn't seem to be the focus of what Donald Trump wants to talk about currently. And having said that, there are some of his supporters who delight in the fact that he talks differently than other politicians. That's part of some of his appeal. He tells it like it is in their phrasing. And so it is a very, I can't emphasize enough that it is a very unusual kind of election, and finding historical parallels to many of the things that are happening doesn't always work very well.
Mm-hmm. Margaret Guth, I want to go back to you as a Trump supporter now. You originally supported Ted Cruz in the Iowa caucuses. Donald Trump has been plummeting in the polls over the last couple weeks since the conventions. If you were a Trump advisor, do you have a reason for that you would take to Donald Trump and advise him about?
Oh, my goodness. I know that he seems to rely very heavily on his persona, and you can only do that so long, and then you're going to burn out. And I think that's probably the struggle that we have, some of us, that he has this personality that he just plays upon, which I think Donna said that is the appeal of a lot of the Republicans that do support him strongly, because he is so different. And he seems to be true to its personality, that is. And people are tired of seeing somebody that says one thing and doesn't do it when they go into office.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that he needs to stay true to himself. And if it is what it is, then, well, it's going to play out.
Mm-hmm. And you don't have any problem with his comments, for instance, this week, calling President Obama the founder of ISIS, Hillary Clinton the co-founder, talking about Second Amendment people. We don't quite know what he meant by that, taking care of the judge's situation on the Supreme Court. You don't have a problem with those comments?
Oh, I think he really does need to tone himself down. And maybe I would say that, watch what you're saying, because, I mean, not everybody understands where he's coming from. But I can see what he's doing, and I just have to shake my head, because everybody else is just going to take it literally.
Mm-hmm. And how do you take it? When others take it literally, how do you take a comment like President Obama is the founder of ISIS?
I just go beyond it, and he's just being sensational. And you're right, some of these comments are being taken, and then suddenly it's off the issue. So I would maybe I would tell him, stick with the issue, don't sensationalize it, and get on with it,
mm-hmm.
Point the arrow straight on.
Many in the Republican Party are not supporting Trump, Margaret. In fact, this week, 50 senior GOP national security officials warned in an open letter that Trump would risk our country's national security and well-being. How much does that concern you when so many top Republican national security officials feel so strongly against Trump that they write an open letter against electing him?
Well, that is concerning, and I just did see some of that listing last night. So I'm not having studied up on why they have their concerns and doubts. It's hard for me to judge at this point and give you an honest answer, but it is concerning. I would want to find out what's going on.
Mm-hmm. So you're with Trump right now. You are staying with Trump, or are you persuadable until November?
Well, I'm sticking with the fact is that I do not want the nominee on the other side.
Okay.
I strictly do not want to see her come to be a president. To me, she would just totally continue to destroy the freedoms that we have in every which way you can imagine.
Dan Durant, you feel the same way about the Democratic nominee, Hillary Clinton, but you may be, you said, going to Gary Johnson's corner, the Libertarian Party there. Of course, I'm sure you've heard several times, if you've voiced this to other people, that a third-party vote, do you feel like that's a vote that's not thrown away?
Yes, it is. Well, it's voting my conscience. And to be clear about Hillary, I probably might have been able to hold my nose and vote for her if it hadn't been for the FBI director's analysis of her email server, whatever you want to call it. And I truly may end up voting for Donald Trump when all is said and done. I just, you know, Donnie, you said provocative. You use the word provocative. If what he said was merely provocative, I probably would be fine with it, but some of it is just outright unsupportable. Mm-hmm. And does he tell it like it is? No. That's not telling it like it is. There's no diplomacy involved whatsoever. There's no tact. There's no sense of, geez, I may be hurting another person, and lack of grace that I think comes with the office of the President of the United States.
Right. And still, Dan, you sound like you could support Trump at some point. Do you imagine Trump being president, sitting in the White House, making decisions? And if you do, what do you imagine that being like?
Well, my hope is that he would surround himself with people who know what they're doing and that he would listen to their advice. Now, he's the CEO of a pretty large company, and I suspect that that's how he runs the day-to-day operations of his business. He wouldn't get where he was today if he didn't operate in such a fashion. So that's my hope. Mm-hmm. And I don't have a whole lot to go on in terms of his ability to conduct foreign policy. And having said that, I'm not convinced that we've gotten great foreign policy in the last 8 years. So to me, it's like, wow, do I want to continue? Here's what it boils down to for me. Which of these two candidates is going to protect my family and grow the economy faster than 2%? The candidate that's going to protect my family and grow the economy faster than 2% is the one that's going to get my vote.
Okay, and you'll be listening over the next 88 days until Election Day. Donna Hoffman, you've been listening to Margaret and Dan here express their reservations, their support for Donald Trump and otherwise. What are you hearing?
I think it's something that we've seen lots of evidence of since we started the Iowa caucuses even, which is this disaffection of certain voters in the electorate. We saw it on the Democratic side. We see it on the Republican side. That gets to kind of this economic uncertainty, fear. Dan mentioned, you know, he wants somebody to protect his family. We all certainly want that. But there's this kind of pervasive fear with the global environment, fear of what might happen with the economy. And so that is something, emotion motivates voters. And so Donald Trump, a candidate who very much is talking to people at an emotional level, in that kind of environment, in that kind of situation, attracts a lot of people who have those fears, less the optimism. You see more of the optimism at the moment coming from the Democratic side. So you can compare just the two conventions that we had in the past month on that. And so this notion of being a fearful environment, certain candidates who push emotional buttons can go quite a long ways. The challenge, of course, for Donald Trump is whether he can cement those people who are kind of lukewarm. Both of these people that you have on today with me don't exactly like, or even stronger than that, the things that he is saying. But they certainly don't want to see Hillary Clinton elected president. And so that's part of this emotional package that Donald Trump is selling out there. And some voters are buying it. Whether enough voters will buy it to make him president of the United States remains to be seen.
Less than a minute, Donna. Donald Trump's poll numbers have dropped sharply since the Democratic National Convention. I wonder, is there precedent for a candidate recovering from, national polls now showing him, some of them even showing him with a double-digit deficit there?
We do see candidates recover, but we're getting to the point where, you know, in the aftermath of the conventions, those numbers usually solidify and stay relatively solid. But also note that the conventions were much earlier this cycle than they have been in recent cycles as well. And so in the next couple of weeks, we typically see those numbers kind of solidify. But certainly events can play a role here because, you know, even if you look at the current polling, the aggregate of polling, Donald Trump had a spike in the aftermath of the Republican convention. That's something that's event-driven. And we have examples of other kinds of event-driven things that may turn a polling trend or, in fact, maybe a blip. And it's difficult. It's actually impossible to tell when that is happening, if it's going to be the making of a trend or if it's just going to be an aberration.
Okay, Donna Hoffman, that's all the time we have for this discussion. Been fascinating to talk with you, Donna, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Northern Iowa. Also, Margaret Guth and Dan Durant, thanks for letting us check back in with you as Republican caucusgoers. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you. Thank you.
River to River is produced by Lindsay Moon, Emily Woodbury, and Claire Roth. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.